Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, it's been a while since we've done this. We are fresh off the NFC and AFC championship games from last night, and I have mixed feelings, man. Which mixed feelings I was trying to text you about last night,
and yeah, I got a little confused. Your text indicated, I wouldn't say so much mixed feelings as redundant feelings, since you sent the same feelings multiple times.
Yeah, I did. Sorry about that. I was doing a little copying and pasting. Since I don't have social media, I use text as my social media from time to time. When Savage. I have something, something really pressing to say. But I think Conspiracy Teddy was in full swing last night. I was seeing fixed games all over the landscape yesterday. I think Raj was up there puppeteering those games. But we can get into that and much more after this break.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, Piper, back. I want to start with a question that I thought of in the middle of the night last night. As I woke up, I was thinking about the games. I was thinking about the Super Bowl and my, like, changing feelings about the Super Bowl as my life has unfolded. What to you, as you look at the next 2 weeks of media, what to you are going to be the most insufferable Super Bowl storylines that we're going to have to endure for 2 weeks? What do you got?
Man.
I got a couple.
Yeah, this year is tough because both teams were sort of favorites. You know, they were.
Yeah,
they might have. I mean, I think before the season when we did our predictions, I think I picked the Eagles, and I think I picked the Niners.
I think you did.
But you know that. Yeah. You know, actually, I think I picked the Niners over the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. And then I think I either picked the Chiefs or the Bills. And so these were the teams that it was like, yeah, of course, this is sort of the snapshot of what you expected, which means the narratives are going to be boring because there's not even like, you know, last year there was like the Joe Burrow upstart, you know, next great quarterback thing. And, you know, and then
Matthew Stafford, suffered in Detroit for 15 years. Now he gets to win a ring. It was kind of nice, you know.
Right. I mean, and they got old because it's 2 weeks of the same thing. This year, I'm like, I don't know, like how many more times can we bow at the feet of Patrick Mahomes? You know, I think the insufferable narrative is going to be Jalen Hurts, leader of men, if I was to guess.
Yeah. I had Jalen Hurts. I had him down my list. I had Jalen Hurts silences the doubters. I think we're tired of that one. I had analytics guys take their victory lap. there seems to be this like connection between online football nerdery and the Eagles, and those guys are definitely like popping the champagne cork this morning and feeling pretty great about themselves.
Kelsey brothers
face off.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. As fun as they both are as people, that one's going to get old quick. It's just going to be a caricature of caricatures.
Oh, absolutely. And Jason Kelsey is one of my favorite NFL players in any position. I love him. The center for Philadelphia. Great player. Fun personality. But yeah, that one's going to get so old. I think personality wise, Travis Kelsey is sort of like Walmart Gronk to me. In that he sort of scans as someone who has a personality, but you spend a couple minutes with him and you're like, oh, there's nothing there. This is just kind of a really loud guy. But yeah, I think my issue is I feel nothing for either team. Like, I have no sort of emotional investment in this game at all.
Yeah.
And I'm having trouble with it on that level. Where are you at on, like, emotionally investing in a Super Bowl at your current age?
I mean, my sports emotional investment has declined dramatically in the last, you know, 5 to 7 years, I would say. And yeah. So unless one of the teams that I have grown up rooting for is in it, I have minimal emotional investment. You know, it could be a blowout, it could be a close. I love a close game, but that's not an emotional investment. That's like watching a suspenseful movie. It's just sort of like, this is exciting. How's it going to turn out?
Yeah.
You know, like the Chiefs Bengals game, like I did not care, but also fun finish in terms of closeness.
Yeah.
Disappointing because the refs were a little overly involved.
I was like, how is Raj going to give this game to Kansas City? That was sort of the storyline.
I don't know. I don't buy the whole fixed game thing. But anyway, I don't care at all. I am excited because there is something to be said for these two teams are probably the two best teams. Like, I think the two right teams are there from a, like this. Last year, the Bengals were not the best team. They got hot. They won those games. I think the Rams probably were in the NFC. And this year, I think we got the two best teams, and that's fun. You know, like this could be an absolute, like, throwing haymakers kind of football game, and we don't get a lot of those. I think the last one that really stands out in my mind is Bills Chiefs from 2 years ago, I think it was. Maybe it was last year when it was just like, and it was a regular season game, but they're just going back and forth. And it was like a 37-35 game in the end, something like that. And just Allen and Mahomes making plays all over the place. This could be one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it could. It definitely could. I always wish that Chris Collinsworth was calling the game when Mahomes does it. I just enjoy how orgasmic he gets about Patrick Mahomes.
I would just love
that Patrick Mahomes.
If you're going to listen to a bad commentator, at least make it one who's like amusingly bad. Tony Romo is just annoying at this point. Like, when he came on the scene, people are like, oh, so insightful about the game. And now I'm just like, he just likes the sound of his own voice. He thinks he's insightful and he adds nothing. He is a complete waste of auditory space.
I had a note on that. I wanted to ask you about it. Like, so I'm kind of watching this unfold yesterday, and I'm really sort of paying more attention to Tony Romo than I have all season. And yes, it definitely seems like the tide of public opinion turned so abruptly on Tony Romo. Because I remember when he started doing color a couple of years ago, everybody's just like, oh, this Tony Romo, he's unbelievable. You know, his insights. And now everybody hates Tony Romo. They're calling for, like, I wish Greg Olsen was doing the game. And my question to you was going to be, can you ever remember the tide of public opinion turning on a broadcaster so quickly as it has for Tony Romo? Like, NFL, NBA, any sport? Because I can't. I was trying to think about it.
But also, I think it's a social media driven thing, because Tony Romo was never a good commentator. That's the thing. What happened was there was like three or four clips that sort of went viral of him, you know, reading a formation and being like, oh, look for this play coming. And then they ran that play and they're like, this guy's a genius. Right. I'm like, no, this guy has studied six clips of film and that's one that he recognized, you know, and that's not, I'm not questioning his football intelligence. He was a good quarterback for quite a few years. But he was never a good commentator, and he over-talks, you know, in the same way that Collinsworth is sort of the big growly presence, and you're just like, oh, shut up.
Uh-huh.
Romo is pushing that. Whereas, like, so I think the tide turned because he was hyped up unnecessarily, and then of course, it's a little bit like what happened with Steph Curry, you know, like, he was the most beloved, and then he was hated. And you're like, he didn't actually change at all. We just see him differently.
Yeah, that's a really interesting insight. And I think there's some fatigue at play. And you and I talk a lot about scarcity, and we talk a lot about you have to miss something for a while in order to like it. I just think we got a lot of Tony Romo real quick, And there was a lot of affection, a lot of love for Tony Romo. The same thing's kind of happening. Like, Mahomes is a likable guy, but I think I'm just sick of the Chiefs. I don't know. I'm sick of them kind of always
with
being around.
With the exception of Andy Reid, I will never get sick of Andy Reid.
Oh, no. He's great, dude. And he's so likable. He's so easy to like. But even my Andy Reid emotion is sort of like, I don't know, like, I like D.A. Carson on paper. I agree with him about most things, but, like, I'm not getting off the couch for him. You know what I mean? I'm not going to, like, hear him speak, even if he's in my town, you know? Like, that's sort of the level of affection that we're talking about here.
I would equate Andy Reid to Paul Tripp for a couple reasons.
Similar mustaches.
Yeah, really impressive mustaches, really likable guys, like never heard a negative thing about either of them, really good at their jobs for a long time. Haven't done anything that's like of great extraordinary note, just been clicking along high quality for a long time. But also like when Paul Tripp releases a new book, I'm not like, oh, yes, I need to get this. And when Andy Reid goes to a league championship game, I'm not like, this is amazing. I'm just like, he's a great coach. He's been a great coach for like 25 years. He did it with Donovan McNabb. He did it with, you know, he's done it with Patrick Mahomes. He's done it with guys in between. Like, he's just really good. So he is the Paul Tripp of coaching. And I mean that as a great compliment to both men.
Totally. Yeah. No, that's the perfect comp. It really is. Okay. So now do Nick Sirianni. If Nick Sirianni was like a speaker, an author in our tribe, who would he be?
Oh man, that's a tough one because all right, so the sort of characteristics are kind of upstart, hired for a job out of the blue, kind of uncharacteristic. Like he wasn't the next guy. He wasn't anointed the next guy. He just got that job.
Yeah.
Had
and seemed super enthusiastic, kind of a rah-rah guy, pep talk guy.
Yeah, but also like very football-y. You know, he was not polished. Yeah. I remember his first press conference, he sounded a little bit nuts. Just very much in the weeds of this thing. I'm trying to think who would be a good kind of a theological equivalent.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe Patrick Schreiner. That's not a name that you might know. But
who is he?
You know the name Tom Schreiner?
Yeah.
Biblical scholar at Southern Seminary. So Patrick Schreiner's his son. And he's cranked out like 4 books in the last year of...
Oh, man.
Of like significant theological weight.
Really?
Like a commentary on Acts, a lighter commentary on Acts. He did a book on the Ascension. He's done a bunch of this stuff. And he's like... He's younger than me. He's probably 37.
Wow.
And so, but also like he loves sports. He's kind of a normal dude. I grew up with him. His older brother was one of my good friends up through middle school. He's a dad. He's a husband. He's a normal guy, likes sports, those kinds of things. And so I feel like he's kind of that guy where it's like, well, wait a minute. This guy's cranking out excellent stuff right and left. Where did he come from? Like,
yeah, he's been hanging around, laying in the weeds. He was an assistant for a few years. He was on staff. So you didn't hear about him. But he's got the horsepower.
He's taught at a couple different, seminaries. He was at Western Seminary out in Portland, so he's got the cool factor, and then moved to Midwestern, I think. And I think he's at Midwestern now. And so kind of moved into the larger theological market with a little more scrutiny and has lived up to the hype. Like he's doing it. So that would be my comp.
Dude, that's a good one. What's his vibe? Is he like flannels and boots or is he like bow ties and you know, khakis? What's the vibe there?
I'm not sure where he's at now because I think he probably had to tone it down a bit. Like in Portland, he was sort of, he had the hipstery vibe, you know, sort of like the razor part hair, the mustache.
Hitler Youth,
No, like the twirly mustache.
Oh, okay.
Like the kind of old, like the old school Captain Hook looking thing. That style mustache. I think he's still got sort of the same hair vibe, but yeah, he probably leans more like flannels and jeans that fit real well, as opposed to like the Midwestern like jeans and blazer vibe.
Yeah, Yeah, dude. So what's the ceiling for this guy? How big could he get? Could he get like DeYoung level or higher even?
No, because he's not a pastor. You know, like if
yeah.
you have to be, there's a big difference between, he could be D.A. Carson-y, you know,
okay.
like yeah. that. So, you know, but there's a big difference between D.A. Carson and like, you know, Matt Chandler or Kevin DeYoung in terms of platform, yeah. because when you're talking to thousands of people a week, it's just a different vibe. Yeah. Whereas when you're teaching people and you're speaking at conferences and you're reading papers mm-hmm. at ETS, and then you're, you know, you're just cranking out books of significant substance. It's a different sort of thing.
Totally. Yeah. The ceilings are different for those two categories of guys for sure. Dude, has there ever been an academic with real charisma? You know what I mean? Like somebody who could really do it. Like somebody who, they've always hung their hat on seminary professor or whatever, but they've got the juice to like do popular books that garner a big audience.
I mean,
and I realize we've turned this into just a normal episode of the show at this point. I'll get us back to sports, I promise.
I mean, like N.T. Wright would be that guy, but he's also a clergyman. Like he's not just an academic. No, like by definition, if you have charisma, you leave the academy because you like people, not just holing up in a room full of leather-bound volumes.
Yeah, that's true. It's
It's the difference between the guys who are like the lifelong offensive coordinators and then they try to go be head coach. Like,
yeah.
So the transition you're talking about is what Bill Belichick had to figure out how to do. So you just crushed it as a coordinator for like a decade and a half. And then tried to be a head coach in Cleveland. It did not go well. Went back to being a coordinator. Did go well. Then was hired as head coach when Parcells left New England. And he figured it out. But he never figured it out with charisma. He figured it out to like how to make up for his weaknesses. And so that's the transition. It's the coordinator to head coach transition, academic to pastor. And most guys can't do it.
Yeah, very few can. I mean, it's rarefied territory for sure. Speaking of rarefied territory, I want to pivot the conversation back to sports. And speaking of magnificent white guys, Christian McCaffrey. I'm watching this guy yesterday, and I realized their team lost, but he had that incredible run in the second quarter where he just ran through some dudes. And I'm looking at this guy, and I'm getting the same vibes that I got from Gordon Hayward circa like 5 or 6 years ago, which was, if this guy was around 2,000 years ago, he would be the king of the world. Like, people would be worshiping this person. In terms of looks, money, athletic ability, is Christian McCaffrey the most magnificent white guy in the world at this point? And who else is in the conversation?
Maybe the most magnificent white guy in sports. But like the rest of the world is run by white dudes. So I think we just need to keep it in sports. You know, because like there are actors, there are athletes, there are whatever. Like that's it. That's a whole different grading scale. What makes him stand out is that generally speaking, black guys are better athletes and cooler in the realm of sports than white guys.
Right.
And
it's so rare that we get like a cool white guy. You know,
and somehow somebody's gonna be so mad and so triggered by this conversation, but you know, whatever.
Really?
Yes. People, you know, anytime you bring up race, people just assume you're being, you know, insensitive. When in reality we're just sort of laughing at white people's inadequacy in sports, really.
Totally. We are the butt of our own joke in this segment. But
I'm trying to think of
do quarterbacks count for this?
No, they don't, because they're like golfers.
I agree.
I don't even know if they're great athletes. They're just great at a very particular set of skills.
Also, I think Brady's aged out of it. Yeah. I think Brady has like plastic surgeried himself out of it and aged out of it.
He's proven himself to be like a clinger. You know, he retired after that Super Bowl, he would have held this crown forever. You know, just like,
yeah,
it would, in fact, it would have been named after him. It would have been like the Brady Award for coolest white dude in sports. And yeah. Instead it's like, nah, he faded. That's not what he wanted. It's not what he should have done.
Yeah. And Gordon Hayward has kind of faded too. So, well,
and the thing about Hayward was he was always more like, your little niche crush, because he played for the Utah Jazz and then he moved to Charlotte. So not awesome markets. Yeah. Also, he was never even close to like a top 25 player in the league. He was a really good player, but not that good.
That's right. Yeah, I always had stars in my eyes vis-a-vis Gordon Hayward. I think because he played collegiately in Indiana, and there was a perfect storm for me and Gordo.
Whereas like McCaffrey has a legitimate case for best running back in the league. You know, it's, you know, who is it? It's him. It's Derrick Henry. He seems to be maybe declining. Maybe Nick Chubb. Mm-hmm. You know, last year you might have said Jonathan Taylor. Like, it's kind of, there's a mix of like six or seven guys. You're like, this, you know, Saquon Barkley, McCaffrey's as good or better than any of those guys at football. And that's just numerically. If you just removed all everything else, you just put them on paper next to each other, you'd be like, that guy is exceptional at all parts of the
game. I was trying to come up with a comp for Christian McCaffrey. And I landed on Walter Payton, who's my favorite, probably human being of all time. Like, my favorite athlete, any sport, you know, my first sports idol as a kid. He plays like Walter Payton. Like, he could be physical. He can run through people. He can run around people. He can catch. I felt like yesterday, as their quarterbacks were all dying, like Brock Purdy.
Quite literally, yeah.
Josh Johnson, who's played for 17 teams, comes in and he can't get the play call. It's like, just call a play. Like, you've been in NFL quarterback rooms for the last 15 years. Can't you get him into a play, Josh Johnson? At that point, I was just like, why aren't they letting McCaffrey play quarterback? Like, just pull a Walter Payton, let him play quarterback, run the single wing.
They did for like a play or two, right?
I think so.
They sort of wildcatted it. Yeah, just in terms of sheer football production, I probably would have picked like LaDainian Tomlinson, you know, just
there you go. Yeah,
now Tomlinson,
that's a good one.
Now I'd say if McCaffrey stayed in Carolina, his career path and Tomlinson's would have been really similar, kind of offbeat markets, amazing player, productive in all parts of the game, possibly underappreciated. Moving to San Francisco, is going to change the trajectory for how aware people are of how good he is. Also, that system. Yeah. So long as Shanahan remains coach, is going to put him in a position to put up monster numbers and possibly stay healthier, because he'll be able to do it on like 16 carries a game instead of 25.
Absolutely. No, he's in the right place. So speaking of the Niners, let's talk about quarterback movement this offseason. It's going to be a fascinating few months of run-up to the draft, in the sense that kind of all the quarterbacks circa a couple of years ago in the draft. So I'm thinking of Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson. These guys could all be on the trade block. And I can't remember that ever happening with one draft class. It's wild to me that due to a mixture of circumstance, injuries, not playing well, teams just getting sick of guys way faster now than they used to. Those guys could all be on the move, slash they could be done. Like, I don't know if Zach Wilson ever starts a game in the NFL again, you know, like,
yeah, he's sort of Jamarcus Russell-y. Like, he came in, he has huge, you know, huge physical ability and no ability to actually play quarterback, apparently.
Yeah. That's a wild one, dude. And yet I could see some quarterback whisper guru type sort of wanting to add the Zach Wilson pelt to his wall of like quarterback careers I've resurrected. I he'll get one more shot, you know, hopefully in the right situation. But of all those guys that I just mentioned, like, what's the most intriguing like movement scenario to you?
Trey Lance is the most interesting to me, because I don't think Mac Jones is going anywhere. They hired Bill O'Brien as offensive coordinator, which, you know, they should have just done last year. Like, having this two-headed coordinator in New England, both of whom have proven themselves to be awful NFL coaches. Like Matt Patricia and Joe Judge stink. They're terrible coaches. They've proven it four different times. Okay, let's let them share this job. Okay, that was bound to fail. So, and Mac Jones showed something his rookie year. Like he showed he is an NFL quarterback. I don't know how good he is, but he's a real quarterback. Yeah. So, yeah, I think he stays there, especially because, like, you don't, if there's a rookie, there's a quarterback on a rookie deal with promise, run with that guy because that means you can put money elsewhere.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I think the Jets are probably going to try to go after a bigger named veteran quarterback. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they try really hard to get Aaron Rodgers, something like that.
Yeah. Dude, that'd be wild. Rodgers in New York. Like,
I
weirdly think he's up to it media market wise. He's a guy who enjoys he enjoys sort of a cat and mouse game with the media. He like thinks of himself as a super smart guy.
That's a good way to put it.
I don't know. Aaron Rodgers just thinks Aaron Rodgers is fascinating. And I think I would love just the sort of television of him in the New York media market for a year. I think it would be fascinating. And I really want to see it. It'll be totally different than Favre going to New York in that Favre was like the good old boy in the city kind of vibes, which was its own kind of fun. But this will be like Aaron Rodgers sort of comes across as like the BJ Novak character in the movie Vengeance, if you've seen that. Like
I haven't.
He thinks of himself as as a certain kind of East Coast elite. And I don't know. I just think it'd be a blast for him to end up there. I think it'd be probably disastrous from a football standpoint, but kind of a blast to watch. The Trey Lance thing is fascinating because, you know, people forget the draft capital that they burned to move up to get Trey Lance.
Yeah.
A ton. And yet Brock Purdy played really well. Brock Purdy is sort of the platonic ideal of the Shanahan quarterback in that Shanahan loves the flex of taking a nobody and really making him work in the system. And Brock Purdy is emblematic of that type of person. And yet you've got Trey Lance sort of moldering on the bench with all these elite physical tools. I don't know. What do you do with him? Do you sell him for like below market value just to get something out of it? Or do you kind of double down on Trey
quarterbacks?
Lance?
Yeah. Quarterbacks on rookie contracts are like cars, you know, they're brand new. They're shiny. You drive them off the lot and their value immediately decreases because they have a 5-year window in which they are of a financial value, but they still have to produce. And so a non-productive quarterback on a rookie deal is like the only value he has is that he's not taking up too much of the cap. Other than that, he's holding down the most important position and doing so badly. Read Zach Wilson. So like Lance is going into year 3. Is that right? Or is this going to be year 4? I've lost track. I think year 3.
This is year 3.
Yeah. So he has played 3 games or something like that. Right. You know, he's thrown like 35 NFL passes.
Right.
We still don't know if he's any good. So the only thing to do with, I mean, they could keep him as sort of their backup, their second quarterback. But if they're going to commit to Purdy, that seems like a bad idea because they could recoup some value. You know, they could probably trade Lance for like probably not a first round pick, although maybe it kind of depends. Yeah. Probably more like a second and a third or something like that. And, but then the question is, who wants him, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think there are a ton of teams out there going, we got to have Trey Lance, you know?
I mean, if I was Tampa, I would let Tom walk and consider trading for somebody like Lance. But like Tampa probably needs to do a full rebuild because they put so much into veterans to support Brady.
Right.
You know? Houston, if they don't go quarterback first round and they just try to restock the shelves and then they trade for Lance, something like that. But that's risky.
And I think Houston has a bunch of second round picks. You know, they could deal one of those for Trey Lance. But to your point, it's very risky. And even just the optics of it are risky, right? Like, although I don't know, I think you could sell the fan base and the media on like, hey, we're going value. We're going to use those two first round picks on like super elite guys at their positions. Houston has enough holes that they need to fill on the roster. I mean, they could grab, you know, they could grab an elite edge guy and then, or, you know, one of the elite interior guys from Georgia and then grab Peter Skoronski with their middle of the first round pick, you know, fix the problems at tackle. You know, they could do a lot of good for their roster and then, yeah, flip a second round pick for Trey Lance or Justin Fields or whoever intrigues them on the like slightly older side of the quarterback market.
If I was Houston, I would consider that as well. Cause like if it doesn't work out with Lance, well, then you're back in the, if you have a bad quarterback, you're going to be in the top five of the draft and you can get a quarterback in a future draft. And this year's quarterback class is only okay. Like it's not, none of the guys, they're all sort of beauty in the eye of the beholder guys instead of generate like when Trevor Lawrence
slam
came
dunk
out,
guys.
He was the last sort of generational, like, oh, this is a franchise changing quarterback. All the other guys since are like, man, they might be all right. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah. It could be okay in the right system type guys. I've got a sneaky trade suitor for Trey Lance and it's Miami. I mean, if they, and only they know like how,
cause they love injured quarterbacks in Miami. Is that where you're going with it?
Well, they love injured quarterbacks, but also like Tua might be, you know, he might get a concussion and a stiff breeze at this point. And if he's one more sort of bad hit away from retirement, then I don't think they want to move forward with Skylar Thompson. I won't make the joke that I made to you via text while watching Skylar Thompson play about his name, because I don't like doing name stuff because I have a weird name that I got made fun of for 15 years straight in public
school. See, that's funny. I take the opposite. I'm like, I got a weird name. That gives me a right to make fun of anybody's name because like what? I mean, I've heard I'm the weirdest name here, so I get to say whatever I want.
I'll say the joke then. Skylar Thompson sounds like a Kai Omega who has to like hurry up and get the game over with to get back for big little reveal. I got some laughs via text.
It was funny. I don't see Miami doing that because like, because they're bringing in a guy who is, it kind of depends on how McDaniel, is it Mike McDaniel? That's their coach's name. All these names run together in my mind. I get Mike McDaniel, Mike McCarthy, and all these guys mixed up, but, it kind of depends on how he feels about Lance, but another injury prone quarterback, when they've invested that much in wide receivers, I think it's more likely they try to get Brady, which would be funny because that's why they don't have a first round pick this year. Cause they tried to get Brady last year. Or they get like Jimmy G, cause there's another San Fran quarterback who I think he's just going to be a free agent. You know, or like, do they throw all the money at Lamar Jackson if he's not, franchised? That would be an interesting move.
Yeah, dude.
But
the Lamar thing is wild.
I would put my money on Jimmy G or Tom Brady being the starting quarterback in Miami next year if you force me to make a bet.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good because they need a polished passer to unlock all that receiving talent that they have. And Trey Lance, like, not being able to hit the broadside of a barn is the wrong guy for that, you know, setting.
Maybe he's a good quarterback. Like, maybe that happens. But we have basically seen one preseason game's worth of play out of him in terms of actual passing. So we have nothing to go on. Jimmy G is a better version of Tua. So the things that Tua does well are the same things that Jimmy G does well for the most part, except Jimmy G's just better and more polished at it. And Jimmy G has shown that when he's in an offense with explosive playmakers like Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, he can cut them loose to make some plays. He's not going to win you a bunch of games, but he knows how to play. So I think that's a move. I hope nobody goes after Brady, or that Brady ends up in Vegas and they win four games again and he just disappears. Vegas would be where I think he's more likely to end up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons. Where are you at on like the Brady sadness continuum? Like, because you're right. Like after they won that Super Bowl, there was a moment where you're like, oh my gosh, Tom Brady did it again. He's the king of the world. Look at him. You know, like He's got the supermodel wife. He's got the like passel of, you know, unspeakably attractive kids. He's got all the money in the world. And now, a couple of years later, there's a real, just from a storytelling standpoint, from like a character standpoint, there's a real undercurrent of sadness in Brady that we haven't really seen. Like, even, okay, so even when Favre was kind of doing his tour of retirement, unretirement, and kind of hitting Minnesota and then New York, and, you know, there were all the Favre rumors, it didn't feel sad. It was more just like, huh, this guy loves ball. He can't give it up. You know, the old gunslinger. It was kind of old gunslinger vibes. But with Brady, there's a, to me, an undercurrent of sadness. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think a lot of that, again, has to do with era, in the sense that, like, mm-hmm. we know that a big reason Tom Brady got divorced was because he would not give up football. Now, yeah. I'm 100% sure that's not the only reason, because there's never been a divorce in history that's that simple.
Yeah, that's right.
But we didn't know personal stuff about Favre. Like, we don't, yeah. we didn't know, we also weren't thinking in terms of addictive personality. We weren't thinking, like, we knew that he had at one point a painkiller addiction, and we knew at some point he right. sent dirty pictures to a sideline reporter. And right. and even that stuff in the era was like, it was way before we were thinking in terms of sexual harassment with the clarity that sure. we are now. So it was more just like, dirty old man kind of response at yeah. the time. And so just, I imagine we would have been way more disgusted and distraught at Favre if he was doing the same thing today. But yeah, I think
yeah.
I want Brady to disappear because I'm tired of him as a football player, because he's tarnished his football legacy, and because, like, the guy's just a few years older than me. He's right around yeah. your age, and he's yeah. making a wreck out of his life for stupid reasons. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need more money. He has nothing left to yeah. prove. He is the greatest quarterback in NFL history. And
yep.
and he can't quit. And it's, you know, it's like watching a 46-year-old George Foreman step back into the ring. You're like, don't do it. Like, why yeah. are you, like, you're gonna kill yourself. That's kind of yeah. it feels almost like a desperation on his behalf at this point. Like, somebody save him from himself.
Yeah, it's kind of taken a weird left turn into, like, Shakespearean tragedy at this point, with the divorce and with just the absurdist quality of the whole thing. And even just with, like, the risk you run of people getting sick of you. So I've got a "are you sick of them or not" question that's going to be a blistering hot take and maybe lose us listeners. And we'll get to that right after this break. All right, Pipe, here's my take. I want to hear you on it. Manning family, sick of them.
Oh, so sick. Like, sick of them for years now.
Sick of them. The gambling commercials. Like, how much money do you need? Like, you got to do a BetMGM commercial or whatever gambling thing that they're shilling for. The Monday Night Football thing. Like, I'm sick of it. Just go away for a couple years. Like, let people miss you.
Yeah, and the thing that I... So this is just one of those, I live in a different mental space than a lot of people. So I was speaking to a group of people a few weeks ago, and they asked, you know, got in there on an evening, watched Monday Night Football, was on. And the next day they were like, "Hey, did you watch the Manning cast?" I'm like, "I never watched the Manning cast. I never want to hear the Mannings yeah. talk. Like, I have zero interest." yeah. I was like, if they just broke down football plays, I could watch them the way I watch Dan Orlovsky on ESPN. You know, with right. like, he's got the big screen and he's like, "This blitz is coming from here and here's the coverage and here's the read." That stuff is nerdy delight to me. And if Peyton Manning yeah, or Eli Manning was doing that, great. Cooper Manning, sorry, you don't get to play because you didn't. And yeah. but watching them, like, yuck it up and be pseudo comedians, I could not be more bored with it.
Yeah, it's again, like, an absurdist kind of NFL scenario to have played out. And I just think And I get it. People do what they enjoy. Like, we do podcasts. We've been doing them for years. We enjoy it. We get some ha-has out of
it. That's true. Everything I just said about how annoying they are could apply to us on this podcast.
I know, dude. Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. I do three podcasts. You know, I'm talking into a microphone every week. People are probably sick of this. But yeah, there's a level at which, you know, even going all the way back to Archie Manning and kind of that family just being football royalty and being platformed and spotlighted for just decades on end and the unspeakable success and the money that they've garnered, like, there's a sort of Shakespearean, like, greed to the turn that it's taken. Like, yes. How thirsty do you need to stay for stuff like this? And they're, I think, again, and I'm thinking of all this in terms of, like, novels and characters and stories, like, the dignified move, if I'm writing this character, would be like disappear into the sunset with all your money and then reemerge 5 years later as a part of like an ownership group to buy, I don't know, the Carolina Panthers or whatever. And, or maybe Manning buys the Tennessee Titans and, you know, rebrands and changes the uniform finally. And I don't know. There are all kinds of scenarios, but like doing corny ads for like BetMGM, it's not, I didn't have that on my Manning family bingo card, and it just hits at a weird level.
Yeah, and I'm gonna sound like a really, like, I'm gonna sound like my dad talking to me when I was 18. But where's the dignity? You know, yeah, what,
that's it.
There's a total, they're just shills at this point.
Yeah.
And now if the Manning cast was all they did, I would be like, that I'm not my cup of tea, but like it doesn't feel like shilling. It just feels like a goofy way to, you know, kind of a silly, fun way to broadcast sports. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah. The commercials, the hosting of Saturday Night Live, which they haven't done in a while, but like that's been a thing. Mm-hmm. The Eli trying to match Peyton when it comes to personality, which he doesn't. Yeah. All of it. I'm like, right, man, just, yeah. If they went away and then came back with an ownership group and bought the Texans or bought the Titans or whatever,
right,
all of a sudden they could be like a sports power family instead of a sports like obnoxious family.
Yeah, no, it would be fascinating. And like them buying the Titans is the scenario that like that would be the most interesting. Again, if I'm writing the novel of this, like, that's the scenario, because, as you know, as a resident of Tennessee, and as I now know, Peyton Manning is most people's de facto pastor in this state. Like, many Tennesseans go to, like, I don't know, some vapid megachurch, but, like, in their hearts and minds, like, Peyton Manning is their pastor. And if he were to, like, come down from heaven in a flaming chariot and, like, rescue the Tennessee Titans, it would be, I don't know, people would have heart attacks in the state of Tennessee.
Oh,
it would be,
yeah,
something.
Just, but yeah, the Titans would matter for the first time since Steve McNair. That's for sure.
Yeah, and he could give them just, you know, UT uniforms with just a different color. Maybe bring back the powder blue, but like the big, you know, the big T on the helmet, the big thick stripe on the pants, and just double down on that, and people would lose their minds. It'd be amazing.
Can we make predictions on what quarterbacks end up where?
Let's do it.
You know, get just so here are the ones that I'm thinking of. So we know David Carr is going to be in a new place. Tom Brady likely to be in a new place. Trey Lance.
Yep.
Jimmy Garoppolo. Aaron Rodgers. And then any of the, you know, that sort of Zach Wilson crew as well. But just predictions on who ends up where.
Yeah, no, I like it. Let's do it.
You just want to run through by quarterback and say where we land, where they land?
Yeah, let's do it. And if I forget any of them, like bring him back to mind. Let's do Zach Wilson first. I think somebody deals like a sixth or seventh round pick for him, and he will end up someplace dumb. I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say Washington, you know.
Oof, he'll
kind of stay there on the Eastern Seaboard. Washington's gonna take a flyer. Is Riverboat Ron still the coach there? Like
he
should have been fired.
Well, he fired his offensive coordinator because I think that's his last ditch move to keep his job, which is funny because I think Scott Turner's actually an okay offensive. Like, if you score points with Taylor Heinicke as your quarterback, you deserve a raise and to keep your job. So,
I could also see like Zach Wilson. I could see him going someplace like Dallas as a backup. You know what I mean? Like Jerry Jones trades for him. It's kind of a big story. It's a big splash. He's going to be Dak's backup. You know, he's got tools.
Yeah, kind of the like Mitch that. Trubisky route where like he goes and becomes a backup
Trubisky
and then might
model,
like trips and falls into the starting job and everybody realizes he still stinks.
100%. Yeah. That's kind of the story arc that I'm going with for Zach Wilson. What do you have for him? Anything different or?
Oof, I think that's a good question. I think he probably stays in New York another year, but not as the starter. I think they probably go find there's a veteran quarterback and he sits behind that guy and he either replaces that guy down the road if he shows any signs of life or ends up getting dealt for even less further down the road. So I'm going to pick that he stays in New York as a second stringer.
There you go. Yeah, that's solid and probably the most realistic. Let's do Derek Carr. Where's Derek Carr going? I got some ideas.
Derek or David?
Hear.
I always get those two mixed up. Derek's the current quarterback, right?
Derek's the current quarterback. Yeah, David was the sacrificial lamb of the Houston Texans in the early 2000s.
The punching bag who was broken. Yeah.
He's still getting sacked wherever he is. He's taking pressure. Derek Carr, where's he end up?
I think Carr ends up as the Jets starting quarterback because they try to get Rodgers. A deal doesn't come together. They realize Rodgers is absolutely insane. He's, you know, whatever. Yeah. For whatever reason, that doesn't come together. And he only costs money. Like, I don't think they have to trade for him. I think he's a free agent. So I think Carr ends up in New York as the sort of like, and he maintains his Kirk Cousins-y level of like, he's too good to just get rid of, but he's not good enough to be happy with.
Yeah, that's right. Like, hey, New York, we're going to go 10-7 or 7-10.
He will be the best quarterback for the Jets since help me out here. Like, did Boomer Esiason end his career with the Jets or something? Like, what are we?
Yeah, no, that's a good get. Boomer Esiason ended his career. Ken O'Brien. I mean, honestly, Derek Carr is Ken O'Brien. Like, he's a good NFL quarterback who will never get you to the next level. Like, he's Ken O'Brien. The Jets have had this, man, and it's more sort of quarterback purgatory for the Jets. And, like, the New York media market will hate him because he is Ken O'Brien. Ken O'Brien played at a small college in California. Derek Carr kind of did, too. Man, the comparisons are massive. I almost don't want to see it because, by all accounts, Derek Carr is, like, a really good dude. And he'll just get crucified in that market. I don't want to see it. So I'm going to say he's going to go to the Rams. Huh. I think Stafford is going to retire. Wow. I think Sean McVay's staying and not doing the burnout thing quite yet. Like, I think he's going to the Rams. And I think Stafford's finally going to be like, hey, everybody, my body is actually, you know, held together with twine at this point due to the savage beatings I took in Detroit for 15 years. He's going to walk off into the sunset with his ring. The Rams will need a quarterback. McVay seems to like that kind of guy, that kind of narrative. I could see it. I don't think it's crazy.
I have a second choice for Carr. So the Jets feels like a little bit of a stretch, but like it seems inevitable for the Jets. It does not seem, for all the reasons you just said, does not seem like the best choice for him. Carolina is the best choice for him.
Oh, fascinating. So,
because Carolina doesn't have any quarterbacks. Yeah. You know, they have 11 nobodies, which just means nobody. And they just hired Frank Reich, who is a good offensive coach who likes reliability. And I think Carr is sort of essence of reliability. They also have some decent weapons, you know, solid offensive line, decent running game, pretty good weapons on the outside. So I could see him going there and, you know, being a solid, like, 8-10 win guy for like 3 years with that team.
Yeah, no, that's a good call. And it would be a good media market fit. Like that just makes sense for a lot of reasons. I think the fan base would be legitimately excited to get Derek Carr. And honestly, like, I'm bullish on Carolina. I like their roster. I like their team a lot. That could be sneaky good. All right, who's next? Who are we doing next, Pipe?
Let's do Tom Brady.
Oof. Tom Brady. Man. To your point earlier, this one's depressing. I'm just going Las Vegas. Like, I love the city of Las Vegas. I enjoy going there, but it's also kind of a depressing place. And, like, over the hill, sad, divorced Tom Brady being in Vegas, probably living in a suite at the Venetian. It makes a lot of sense. I'm going Vegas.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me, because this is what artists do when they can no longer tour and fill up stadiums. They
Dude,
go get
so
a residency
right.
in Vegas.
I'm so jealous that you had that take. That's perfect.
So, yeah, the Tom Brady residency in Vegas will be right there. It'll be like him and Celine Dion hanging out.
Right. Like, live at the Mirage. Tom Brady. Yeah. No, that's good. that's really good. Let's do Justin Fields.
Yeah, okay.
Do you think he moves or stays?
I think he stays. He stays because I think what they learned this year is that you can run an explosive offense with him. I don't know how many years you can run an explosive offense with him, but he can do some stuff that other quarterbacks can't do. He developed as a passer, not into a great passer, but into a, like, can make some plays. So what they need to do is go find some offensive linemen and some weapons, because he just didn't have anybody to throw to. If they had a couple decent wide receivers or a tight end, they could scare some people. Not be great, but they could be threatening. And he's still on that rookie deal. So unless you can absolutely upgrade, I don't see a reason to move on from him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think they trade out of that number one slot. They pick up Skoronski and a wide receiver, and they go into the season in much better shape. And I think they keep Fields because of how well the Jalen Hurts thing has gone. I think they look at Jalen Hurts as, like, paradigmatic of what Justin Fields could be and what running an offense through a running quarterback can look like. But to your point, they have to have weapons. And Philly, like, doubled and tripled down on getting weapons.
And has the best offensive line in the league, which is, you know, Philly's offensive line is fun to watch, which you don't say about many off. Well, you might say it about offensive lines. Most people don't. I would also like to take this moment to, and I may have done this previously, but to say I apologize to Jalen Hurts and to all of the Eagles fans. Well, no, not the Eagles fans. I don't care about you people. Just to Jalen Hurts for my "he's a quarterback who throws" take at the beginning of this season. He's a quarterback. He's a really good quarterback. And is he a system quarterback? Sure, but so is everybody else. Like, every quarterback thrives in the right system. Yeah. And he has owned that system. And has two great wide receivers and a good tight end, and he uses them. So, yeah, I was wrong. Jalen Hurts, really good quarterback. Well done. Yeah. And mea culpa.
Yep. I agree. I second that emotion.
I think Trey Lance Rogers and Jimmy G are sort of the last two.
Oh, yeah. Rodgers, we kind of did. Yeah. I have him going to New York.
I think Rodgers actually stays in Green Bay. I think New York tries to get him and it doesn't work out, but I think Rodgers stays in Green Bay.
Yeah, no, that's probably the more realistic take for sure. All right, Trey Lance and Jimmy G. Let's do these two. Let's do Jimmy G first. Where do you have him going, Pipe?
Miami would be my first choice. Reunite with his former offensive coordinator, steadier hand than Tua.
Same system, same language.
Really good wide receivers. So that would be my first choice.
Yeah.
He would be a good option for Carolina if Carr doesn't land there.
Yeah. No, I agree with those. I like those a lot. Let's end with Trey Lance. Kind of the wild card here. And we're forgetting a couple of franchises that still need quarterbacks. Seattle needs a quarterback, unless you're happy with Geno Smith. I don't think you are if you're Seattle. I mean, honestly, Denver needs a quarterback. We're going to hear all the rejuvenated Russell Wilson chatter over the offseason, like, oh, he lost 12 pounds, he's gone vegan, he's doing this, he's doing that. I don't buy it. He stinks. Denver needs a quarterback. Seattle needs a quarterback. I think one of those two teams is going to try and buy low on Trey Lance. Who's it going to be? Who's the head coach in Denver? Have they named somebody?
No, because they just had a secret meeting with Jim Harbaugh this week that it was ended up not being secret. Right. So no, they're...
Yeah, that's right.
They had... I mean, I can't see him going to Denver because they just traded all of their all of their picks for...
Yeah, they got no draft capital.
The quarterback they want him to turn into.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Oh, dude, talk about tragedy. Denver.
Only for the fans. Situation. The rest of us kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, man, Trey Lance. You know what? I'll say Seattle. He stays on the West Coast. Pete Carroll, the eternally young Pete Carroll, gets to, like, you know, raise up a toolsy quarterback and kind of make him into the second coming of Russell Wilson. He'll have him handing the ball off 42 times a game and scrambling. I'm going Seattle.
See, while that makes a lot of sense, I don't see Seattle doing that because Geno played really well this year. They were more competitive than anticipated, and they're still in sort of like they're not ready to be a real contender. So they have some other needs, but. So I think they re-signed Geno to the kind of contract that is like he could start for the next couple of years, or if they found the guy, he can be the sort of stopgap starter, mentor type guy. So I think they keep Geno.
Yeah.
And so I don't think Lance goes there. I don't think Denver trades for a quarterback. I think they have to try with Russell Wilson one more year, and which is not going to go well, I don't think, but I think that's what's going to happen. I think Lance ends up with a team that currently has a quarterback that is mildly like they want something better, but they don't have high enough draft position to go get, you know, Stroud or Young or whoever. Somebody brought up to me, there's sort of talk around Minnesota. Like, what about Minnesota trading?
I was just going to go there, dude.
And when I heard that, I immediately was like, ooh, I'm intrigued. So
that gets the blood flowing a little bit.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
Like, we know exactly what Cousins is at this point. And in some sense, I hate him less than I used to because I look around at the league, at all the other quarterbacks, and I'm like, it could be a lot worse. Like, it could be way, way worse than this. However, we will never be better than this. So
correct.
Yeah. If we gave up something, you know, a couple future seconds or whatever to go get Trey Lance, I would be excited about that. So I don't think I would bet on this in Vegas, but I'm going to predict it from my heart that Trey Lance is a Viking next year.
Ooh, dude, that would be fascinating. And Kirk would kind of throw a fit. I like it for the TV. I like it for the drama. Your entire fan base would then be rooting for, like, I don't know, Kirk to, like, break his clavicle in the preseason or whatever.
It would be one of those situations where, like, I think Kirk is on the books for next year. So they would just ride out his salary. And, like, if he gets hurt, which granted, he's a really durable quarterback. That's one of the things he's very good at. They ride it out and Lance has a year of development, or like after the bye, they make the switch and like Kirk is just grumpy and they just tell him to go home. Kind of like the Raiders did with Carr this year, where they're like, nah, I want you to just not come to the office anymore. But, you know, that would be, I have no idea if Lance is good, but I would really like to find out with him in purple. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, I would too. Dude, I would too. Like, young head coach, young offensive-minded head coach who used to be a quarterback coach. I love that, actually. It would make the NFC North really interesting. It would start the end of, you know, the sort of end-of-life narrative for Cousins, which I've been waiting for a decade. There's so much to like about that. I kind of want to end on that note, Pipe. Anything else you want to say that we didn't get to either from the list or off the list? We can do the jersey numbers thing, dude.
Let's save that. That's an evergreen, and it's not going away. But we definitely need to talk about NFL numbers that just simply don't work at some point. No, I think we should just end with a quick Super Bowl prediction, since it's a game we're both so excited about.
Yeah, dude. Quick note on that. So KK and I have started doing kind of college ministry at our church, and I know this will offend no one because none of these kids listen to this, because like the kind of college kid that our church pulls is sort of, I don't know, super nerdy and kind of Amish, for lack of a better term. And like, so we're having a Super Bowl party at our house, and this is the perfect scenario because I'm going to have a house full of like really kind-hearted little dorks who don't know anything about football. Because I feel nothing for the game, I won't have to pay attention to it. I don't know. It's kind of working out perfectly for me in that regard. If this was a game I really wanted to watch.
Will you have them sign a waiver not to be scandalized by Rihanna's halftime show?
Yeah, I'm gonna shepherd them all out of the room. Like they can huddle up in my office. We'll treat it like a bomb shelter until the halftime's over, and then they can trickle back out to the
living
room.
Quick story. When I was in college, I was at a Super Bowl party with friends from college ministry, and we were, you know, it was pretty conservative church, not quite as Amish as you're describing, but quite conservative. Yeah. And it was at one of the elders' houses, and this was one of the elders who was like, He was offended we were having a Super Bowl party instead of going to Sunday night church, which none of the college kids did anyway. Totally. But that was the context. And it was the wardrobe malfunction halftime show. So,
oh man,
it was like 25, 30 college students, mostly from Wheaton, pretty conservative kids, when the nip slip happened. Yeah. And it was like, It was as if we were in the Twilight Zone, because everybody was like, we can't talk about this, but we can't not talk about this. We're not entirely sure this happened, but I'm pretty sure that was a boob. And like, it was very, it was hilarious. And I don't want another wardrobe malfunction, but I do want you to enjoy the experience of navigating college students who are conservative through that, because it would be delightful for me.
Yeah. And if that happens, I'll text it to you twice. Let's say I'll covenant to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. So no, it'll be wild, dude. And like, even just the sort of unwritten expectations of a moment like that, where like, I don't know, as the adult in the room, do you have to make the perfunctory, like, well, this is a lot. Like, do you have to make that comment? Do you have to like, cause I've been at Super Bowl parties with like, kind of uptight adults from my churches over the years, and there's always the dude that like, when the slightly scandalous or lurid commercial comes on, has to make like, he makes theater out of turning his head away, you know what I mean, like, everybody look at me, not looking at this.
I think the correct way is to make the joke that acknowledges this just happened, that moves it into the realm of the absurd, and just like kind of eases the tension. Yeah. So even something just like, well, that was fun, or like,
yeah,
you know, if it depending right. on you the sense of humor you have with somebody, like turning to a fellow male leader and be like, why don't you ever do that? And those kinds of things where you just, you just sort of, you break the room and people are like, okay, that was not good that it happened. Also, we're all laughing now. And then it's behind you, instead of sort of creating a moral burden for people.
I like that. No, that's good. That's the only way to deal with it. Yeah. So you turn to like your associate pastor and you're like, hey, are you going to have your sport coat fall off the next time you speak? You know, something
right, show
like
a little
that.
Shoulder next time you preach, bud.
That's right. Show us that, you know, button down Oxford. Yeah, no, I love it. I'm going shootout. I'm going 38-34, probably Philly. Philly gets their victory lap. The analytics guys will be insufferable. 38-34 Philly.
All right. Yeah. I think it'll be close. I think I'm going to pick Philly because of health. I think Mahomes is a little bit hobbled. Obviously he's good, but I think I'm going to pick Philly, and I'm going to go let's see, 28-24 Philly.
There you go. Yeah, that's good. Dude, regarding Patrick Mahomes' health, this is, again, like, I don't know, proof number 4,000 that I'm just too old. Like, I'm watching him sort of have a Willis Reed moment yesterday on the screen where he's kind of hobbling around after throwing a pass. And I'm watching it and I'm going, I should feel something about this. You know what I mean? I should feel, I don't know, warm, respectful, like Willis Reed feelings about this. And it just did nothing for me. And like, I like Patrick Mahomes. I have nothing against the guy, but maybe I've just seen too much sports. You know what I mean? Did Mahomes hobbling around in a Willis Reed-esque sort of way do anything for your heart yesterday?
No, not even a bit. I didn't. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those, like, that's respectable. But like, it felt, maybe it's because I'm reaching the age where I just hobble around all the time. So I just sort of am like, that's how you navigate stuff. I also think like there's a big difference between theater happening and creating theater. And it feels like in those moments, the announcers are trying to create an Al Michaels moment or whatever, you know, do you believe in miracle? Like, and instead of just like letting tension and the courage or the fortitude kind of stand on its own.
Yeah, dude, you're so right. And I think that's what was happening in my head as I was watching it. I was sort of trying to like think through, you know, how everybody was going to tweet about it or talk about it or try to make it their moment rather than just letting it happen. And I think that's everything wrong with today. But at any rate, Pipe, me and my house full of Amish kids are going to enjoy the Super Bowl. I imagine we'll tape a Super Bowl postmortem / NBA thing / talking about the draft thing sometime soon. This has been fun, sure, man.
It has been.
Anything else you want to say before we adjourn?
No, it's been fun, and I look forward. Well, I don't really look forward to the Super Bowl, but I kind of look forward to the Super Bowl. I look forward to hearing your experience watching it with Amish kids.
Exactly. I'll keep you posted. Pipe, we've done what we always do on this program, and that we've wandered to and fro throughout some player movement, some Christian McCaffrey. It's been fun, man. I enjoy doing this. And until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. Be sure to visit thehappyrant.com to check out our merchandise, learn more about upcoming live events, and listen to past episodes.
Feeling stressed? Let's take better care of you. I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stress Less Podcast. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.